So we're reading from Bhajan Rahasyam, discussing the verse from Shikshastakam, Adanam na janana sundaram kavitam va jagadishagamiye mama janmani janmani shvade bhavata bhakti rahuitaki toyi. Yesterday we discussed the meaning of sundaram kavitam, which means, includes the concept of moksha, because beautiful language, the Vedas are full of beautiful language which encourage us or guide us towards moksha. And Lord Chaitanya is telling us in this verse, don't be attracted. It looks beautiful, sundara. Sundara means beautiful. And it's poetic. It looks beautiful and sounds beautiful. Kavitam. It's music to my ears. I have a phrase like this, music to my ears. The Sanskrit is arranged in such a way, and the proposal that is being presented in this beautiful flowery, the term is used, flowery, or we're attractive. Flowers are pretty, they're attractive, they're fragrant. So the language is pretty, it's attractive, it's fragrant. Fragrant with alankar and ornamentation and literary embellishments. So it attracts our mind, and what the language is describing is very beautiful. Sundara kavitam. To go to heaven and be surrounded by dancing girls, I guess it's fun, and then to drink soma ras and to live forever and live for a fabulous long lifespan and no disease, and there's no pregnancy and there's no abortion and all these things. I think there's pregnancy in the last year of life or something. And you drink soma ras, which is very enervating. It's like special high-powered ginseng. You may not, would you like to hear about soma ras? Because actually, it's an interesting plant. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that, be thou happy by the performance of the sacrifice, thou men and demigods can live happily by the exchange. So this soma is a plant that grows in the Himalayas. It's called soma lata. Lata means creeper. It doesn't grow on the heavenly planets. Like sometimes in this world, a lot of people depend on Colombia. Colombia is a country in South America. And there's some product that comes from Colombia, which people around the world depend on. That product is not produced locally, but it comes from Colombia. And so they depend on having good friendship with Colombians. Right? Maybe you understand what I'm talking about. And I don't mean coffee. It could be coffee also. It also begins with a C. So the soma lata used to grow in the Himalayas. It's a very special plant. It's a creeper. It's a plant. It's not some transcendental thing. It's a plant called soma lata. Soma means moon. So it has a relationship to the moon. On Amavasya, the soma lata has no leaves. Amavasya means dark moon. Then on Ekam, or the first day of the moon, the soma lata has one leaf. Then Dvitiya, Tritiya, Chaturthi, Panchami, Saptami, Astami, Nomi, Dasami, Ekadasi, Dvadasi, Trayodasi, Chaturdasi, Purnima. So every day one more leaf comes on the plant. So you finally, by Purnima, there are 15 leaves there. Because from Amavasya to Purnima, 15 leaves. You're seeing something? Here, in the house? He's on the roof? So much for the fence. They come sometimes. So, the soma lata is a very special plant. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore. But it's described in Ayurveda, and you must have read about it in Bhagavatam, soma lata. Or you've heard Samaras, or Samayagya. So what happens is that on the Earth planet, they used to collect the Samalata in the Himalayas on Purnima. And then they would take all the leaves and grind them, like you make a juice, like juice from mint leaves or whatever. And then they would get this juice, and then this, which is called, juice means ras, Samaras means, like we have wheatgrass juice. You ever had wheatgrass juice? You juice up the wheatgrass, and it's supposed to have all these beneficial effects for curing cancer and It's highly touted as being a tonic drink. When cows eat it every day, they don't really think much about it, but wheatgrass. So this somaras is like that. They make the somaras, and then they perform a yajna, a sacrifice. It's called soma yajna. Yajna is a yajna. So they invite all the demigods. So the demigods come, and they offer this somaras to them. They sit in a line, and they, like prasadam, like the prasadam hall. Sit down, you get your cup of sweet rice. And if you get two or three, you feel good. So here, all the demigods sit down in line, and they get their cup of somaras. And they feel really good. And this somaras has the effect of making them live forever, practically. They don't get any, they're just body state, they're fragrant, they're healthy. So they're very mad after the somaras. But they depend on the earthly beings to give it to them. So this is interdependence. We get them the stuff, and they give us the stuff. Like the Colombians sell their goods, and they receive goods in exchange, right? Similar thing is going on this planet. So the king, first of all, the yajnas are costly. To collect the somaras, you just send a bunch of people to run up the mountains and pick the leaves. But then, for the demigods to come, they're royal people. They have to have a very elaborate arrangement. So you have to have all kinds of housing for them and entertainment for them and all kinds of food for them. And so that's very costly. So you can run up and pick the leaves. And you can say, here, look, demigods, I got the stuff. And they'll say, hey, no, you have to have the arrangement. So then you make the arrangement. It's called Soma Yajna. And do the yajna, then the demigods come. And then you feed them the somaras, which they have to have. They're addicted to it. They have to have their somaras, just like people have to have their products from Colombia. So then they say, listen, I'm very happy with your soma yajna. What do you want? They say, well, make the rain nice, make the sun nice, make the weather nice. So then the demigods, what they're in control of, all these different aspects of nature, they make it very nice for the kings and their kingdoms. So this was the main thing that the earth planet was supplying to the demigods, was somaras. This is the main export quality, export product. And as long as the demigods got their somaras, then they were happy. And when it was Kartik and Vrindavan, it was nice and cool and refreshing. And there's plenty of rains during the rainy season, but they're not getting any somaras. So they're unhappy. They're agitated. Like if you don't get your dinner, you get agitated. That's just a side point. But in other words, it was related, because when we read about this, oh well, I'll go to the heavenly planets, I'll drink somaras, and I'll live for a fabulous life and all this. So this is all Sundara Kavitam. So now, Nadana Najana Nasundaram Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye. So this word Kamaye means the desire, means literally we can say just desire, but sometimes it's given a little bit more meaning. Because all these different points we're going to put together in relation to the chanting of the mantra. So this is just the understanding of the verse in relation to chanting the Maha Mantra. Kamaye means literally, I desire. So all of our activities, everything we're doing is based, the root of everything we're doing is desire. That's why the jnanis say that all of our actions cause us difficulty. We act in this world and we get so much reaction. And reaction comes in the form of problems, happiness, distress, heat and cold, birth and death, disease, old age. All of our actions. So the way to find perfection in life is to stop action. And to stop action, you have to stop desiring. Desire is the root or the basis of action. So they try to stop desire. But they're not very successful. The desire to attain pleasure and avoid pain. This is the basic movements of the human being. Human desire is divided into three categories. So here, in one commentary, it says that the word kamaye represents these three categories. It represents kam, art, and dharma. So kam itself means desire for sense pleasure. Though we're never satisfied, it never satisfies one, it drives one to pursue the same sensual experience again and again. The synonym for kama is pleasure, joy, or sense enjoyment. So this word kamaye also indicates tamagun. So the covering of tamagun makes us always go in the same wrong direction repeatedly. We try for something and then we suffer, but then we try again and then we suffer, then we try again and then we suffer. We're trying to find satisfaction by pursuing that desire, but we find frustration and anxiety and not satisfaction. But because of covering of ignorance, we continue perpetually try again. Then kama also refers to the third category of human desires, desire for kama, and then desire for art. Desire for material acquisition, wealth, home, power, security, economic development, and necessities and ideals. This is all due to the influence of Rajagun. Makes us desire in this way. We can desire due to ignorance. We can desire due to Rajagun. And the desire will take the shape of all these things. Ideals. Then we can desire due to Sattvagun. When we're influenced by Sattvagun, we'll desire Dharma. We'll desire yoga, meditation, enlightenment, self-discovery, God, philosophy. This is due to the impulse of Sattvagun coming in us. So Dharma means the desire for virtue, desire for good character, righteousness, wisdom. So one way you can describe these three words, dharma, art, and kam, is virtue or wisdom, power and security, and pleasure and joy. A very interesting way. And we say dharma, art, kam, moksha. So if we get tired of all these things, then we say I want moksha. So if we get tired of material wisdom or this piety of dharma, virtue and wisdom, that's dharma. Or we get tired of having power and the feeling of security or independence, which is art. Money and wealth and possessions and opulence gives a sense of power and security and independence, which is, of course, all false. But that's Rajagun. And then this calm itself means pleasure or joy. All these three are products of the three modes of material nature, arising out of the need to be something. Very interesting. Dharma, art, and kam. To desire to be righteous. The desire to be religious. The desire to be a wise man. The desire, all these things, desire for joy, desire for happiness. It's all arising out of the desire to be something. Just very interesting. The need to be gratified, the desire, the need to be something, the need to be gratified, that is calm. The need to be powerful, that is art. And the need to be virtuous, that is dharma. In verse 4, Nadanam Najanam Nasundaram of Shikshastakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he rejects all these false goals. Dharma, art, kama, and moksha, liberation from the material world. He teaches that we don't need to become something. We don't need to become something because we already are something. When they are a child, adults will meet you and say, what do you want to become? When you grow up, or you're in college, or you're going to school, what do you want to be? What did they have? What was that philosopher said? I am, therefore I am. Or, I exist, therefore I am. That's pretty good, actually. Okay, and that's what Lord Chaitanya is basically. I exist for the eternal pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, you know, you just have to kind of modify it. It's not bad. I exist, therefore I am. So, and similar phrases, there are other phrases like this. So the need to be something, so the general material society reinforces this concept. You have to, whatever you are now, it's not sufficient. You have to become something, or you need to be something. So Lord Chaitanya teaches that we don't need to become something because we already are something far greater than anything the limited human experience can afford. We are eternal spiritual beings, part and parcel of Krishna. We are part and parcel of the Supreme Person. We are eternal loving servants of Krishna. With this realization, we transcend the world of matter and enter the realm of consciousness. Security and wisdom and pleasure, Satchitananda, are inherent in the jiva soul. When the purified soul experiences liberated life in relation with God, he realizes his eternal form, his eternal service, and the joy of love of God. Therefore, in this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has only one desire, the desire for bhakti, bhakti for its own sake, without ulterior motive. This is a very nice explanation of Kamaye. So this word Kamaye, this is one idea that it includes all these things, all these desires for Dharmarth Kama. Lord Chaitanya says, forget it. You are something. You don't need to be anything. Just realize your potential, what we have within us. Sometimes devotees pray. They also, we have desires as devotees. We pray to Krishna for wealth, for followers, or a beautiful wife or husband. Approaching Krishna with material desires is not pure bhakti. And by nourishing such material desires, one will not attain Krishna prema. Rupa Goswami explains in Madhya Lila, says, Bhukti Mukti Adivancha Jari Mone Hai Sarana Karlila Prema Utpanana Hai. He says, if one harbors desires for material enjoyment or liberation within his mind, he will not attain Krishna prema, even if he practices sadhana. Pretty interesting. I forget what verse is in Madhya Lila chapter 19. Lord Chaitanya explains this verse by giving an analogy in verse 176. I guess it's actually chapter 19 in Madhya Lila, verse 175. And 176, he says, this is what is more famous. He explains this verse by giving an analogy. In other words, we're doing sadhana bhakti, but as long as we're holding on to in other words, our anyabhilash, and our tendency to desire is tendency, we're holding on to our tendency to desire materially rather than realizing our tendency to serve Krishna. Then he uses an analogy. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi vridi vartate tavat bhakti sukhai syatra katam abudya buddhayo bhavet. The desire for material enjoyment and the desire for liberation are like two witches which haunt one like ghosts. As long as two witches live in the heart, how can the bliss of how can one feel the bliss of bhakti? So then in the commentary they say, whatever a ghostly person eats is consumed by the ghost. So such a person always remains very skinny. Must be, I have ghosts. All the endeavor of a devotee who desires material enjoyment or liberation is consumed by those desires. Therefore, spiritual progress is very slow. So apparently, in the physical world, if someone is he ordinarily is somewhat, his normal feature is somewhat heavy set or healthy, and he becomes very, very skinny, very, very thin, then it's sometimes assumed that he has been haunted or been taken over by ghosts. And somehow or other, this analogy is used that when that ghost is inhabiting his body, it disturbs him. He becomes very disturbed. His sleep becomes disturbed by the ghosts influencing him, or maybe repeatedly trying to kill him or harass him, because ghosts do these things if you read about stories about ghosts. And so because he's in so much anxiety or being so much harassed, he can't sleep at night. So if you don't sleep, your health will go down. And if you don't sleep, you won't have appetite. And so and the next day he won't eat, and day after day he will not eat, so he gets skinnier and skinnier. So if one is inhabited or taken over by a ghost, he often becomes very skinny because his life airs become disturbed. When your life airs are disturbed, you have no Jataragni, no fire of digestion. There's no sleep, there's no eating. So if you don't sleep and you don't eat, unless you're a transcendentalist, you'll become extremely unhealthy or sick. So similarly, this is that if these two ghosts of bhukti and mukti, what it says, bhukti mukti spriya yavat pishachi riddhi vartate, if they have manifested in the heart, or they're manifesting there, continuing to live there like two witches, the witch of enjoyment and the witch of liberation, then although we're eating bhakti, we're eating food, is being consumed by them. We're practicing bhakti, but the results are being consumed by the two witches. So we're not actually attaining any progress, because we're engaged in sadhana, but at the same time we're holding on to these internal desires. A devotee who desires material enjoyment or liberation is consumed by these desires. Therefore, his spiritual progress is very slow. Once one relishes the sweetness of Krishna's holy name, the ghosts will be exorcised. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he used the analogy, he says that it's like having worms. He said if you have worms in your intestines and you eat the food, you're eating some food, but then the worms eat the food and you stay skinny. He just used a practical. This is very practical. People have too many worms in their intestines. The worms actually eat the food and become very healthy and very long. This is very practical. The ghost analogy may be not so, maybe you don't believe it, but worms are very common. If someone's very skinny, that they'll be suffering from worms. So he often says that if someone is practicing bhakti, but his material desires are like worms, and they're eating up all the results of his bhakti. It's very nice, he says, maybe it's Sri Chaitanya's teachings. I read it somewhere. Was it one of his letters? It was one of his letters, as in Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj published a book in Bengali of letters to, like Prabhupada's letters book, letters to brahmacharis and different devotees. And he said, Guru Maharaj, why am I not making advancement? I've been chanting for so many years. And he said that you have worms. He wrote back and he said, you have worms. He said, you're maintaining worms in your body. You're holding on to material desires and they're eating up all the results of your practice. How to solve the problem? Krishna is very merciful. And he personally removes the material desires by making the devotee lose interest in them. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 19, verse 2 or 27, Jiva Goswami gives a tika, which is very interesting. He says, sometimes people worship Krishna to fulfill material desires. Because they don't know the sweet taste of selfless service. Yet Krishna responds in such a way to give them his lotus feet. And they feel by receiving Krishna's lotus feet, all their desires are fulfilled. Just like a child eating dirt. The mother will come and take the dirt out of his mouth and put a sweet laddu in it instead. Jiva Goswami's analogy. So the devotee approaches the Lord and he prays to the Lord, Kamaye, that we should, because Lord Chaitanya, this Shikshastakam is Shiksha, it's instruction, it's not for the managers of General Motors. These instructions are for us, for the devotees. So if he's seeing, Lord Chaitanya is analyzing the devotees, he's saying, oh, is there some kamaye in you? Is there some desire in you? Then this should come out. Because you should get this ahoituki bhakti, Bhagavad bhakti ahoituki. And you should, and no matter to what extent, desire the lowest type form of desire, just base sense gratification or carnal enjoyment, up to the fabulously wonderful enjoyment of merging in Brahman or going to heavenly planets or higher planets, from the lowest category of desire to the highest category of desire, wholesale it should be removed. And he's coming like with his knife in his hand and he wants to cut the head or the root of all these material desires. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he used the analogy, he said that like in the butcher shop, so many goats are lined up and he's cutting their heads one by one. He said a devotee should line up all his material desires and cut them off one by one. put them in a line, if we're aware of them, and then chop their heads off. Because once the head is chopped off, there's not much chance for survival. But we just go, the way we do it, we usually, when the material desires come before us, usually we give them a haircut. We just shave them up and let them run around. If you catch a goat and they shave him up and say, that's okay, keep running, and he runs around in their mind some more. Because we're afraid to actually chop them. Because they're like our pets. You don't want to chop the head off your pet goat. So our material desires are like our pets. Rather than cutting their heads, we pet them. We favor them. Oh, you're nice, nice desire. Stay with me. Don't leave me. Here, sit down. Have some food. So we maintain them very nicely. We're really taking good care of them. We have a whole garden or a whole farm full of material desires. And Bhakti Siddhanta says we should open a slaughterhouse. We should open a slaughterhouse in our mind and invite all of the goats. Dangle some grass in front of them. Look, some grass. Come. Oh, that's nice. Come. And the goats will follow us, and then tum, tum, tum. Then it would be nice, clean farm and clean mind. So Jiva Goswami is explaining that the child is eating dirt. So the mother comes and takes out the dirt and puts in a laddu. So we're chewing on these desires. We're chewing on these material desires, which are rather, it's like chewing on sawdust. I can't get much sweetness there, or relish or rust there. It's extremely dry. So then Krishna personally comes for the devotee, as he's saying, he takes the sawdust out of his mouth and puts in a rasgulla, or a gulab jamun. So this is our hope, that he says that he gives them. Krishna responds in a way to give them his lotus feet, and thus they feel by receiving them that all their desires are fulfilled. Just like a child eating dirt, the mother will take the dirt out of his mouth and put a sweet laddu instead. Because somehow, why is the child is eating dirt? Because he's hungry. Sometimes they eat dirt when they're hungry. Of course, Krishna was playing. He ate some dirt in Brahmandagat. Some clay over there, and that's the whole Leela. He ate the whole universe. All the dirt in the whole universe he put in his mouth. And his mother ran over there because she already gave him the sweets beforehand. He put down the sweets and picked up the dirt. So here it's a reverse. The child may. Why is the child eating dirt? He may be hungry. Children always stick things in their mouth out of hunger or out of curiosity, because that's their first organ of perception in this world. They can't even see when they're born, but they can taste. They can eat. So they taste the mother's breast. So the first organ of perception in this world is a tongue. So that's how they, oh, dirt. What? Let me understand what this is. So they don't touch it. They don't see it. They put it in their mouth. Or they may be hungry. So the mother may be inattentive and the child's hungry, so he just grabs some dirt and eats it. Even not only children, but even sadhus sometimes eat dirt. You read about the life story of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He was eating dirt also. But it wasn't ordinary dirt. It was the Chintamani Bhumi of Mayapur. And he was getting a little wheat flour. He was doing a little, somehow, I don't know, they say like that, but he's getting some, begging from some Brahmin or asking, although we said that Madhukari is not the standard. But he was getting some wheat flour from, not wheat flour, but some flour. He was getting from somewhere, maybe chana flour. And he was mixing it with some water from Ganga and some dirt from the bank of the Ganga. And he's making laddu. And he was just eating it. Because, of course, this dirt is very powerful. So even Siddha Mahatmas can eat dirt. But in this analogy, the child is eating dirt out of hunger. So the mother says, hey, stop, don't eat that. This is not good for you. Well, you're hungry, you're looking to eat something, you're trying to eat, but this will not satisfy you. Why? Look, I have something very nice for you. Now let me take this out and give you this. Take this laddu. So Krishna is like a mother for the devotee. As Vrindavan Das Thakur, in Vrindavan Mahimamrita, Prabhudananda Saraswati, he says Vrindavan is like a mother. And like a mother, she tolerates all the offenses of her children. So he prays, oh, Vrindavan, please, I have taken shelter of you like a child takes shelter of his mother. So please be kind to me. And please overlook overlook all my transgressions and overlook all my offenses and nourish me and protect me and give me your mercy. It's a very nice prayer, Vrindavan Maya murmured. And he says that Vrindavan is like a mother. Because a child does so many nasty things to the mother, like pass stool on him and urinate on her and break so many things. And it's hard life for the mother. But she tolerates and keeps kissing him and embracing him and feeding him. It's all part of the drama of motherhood. So this is Kamaye. In Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 38 and 39, there's a nice verse. Krishna kahe amal bhaje mage vishaya sukha, amrita chari visha mage e bhara murka. A devotee, this is Mahaprabhu speaking, he says, a devotee who worships me to get sense enjoyment is a big fool, bhara murka. A big murka. For he gives up the nectar to drink poison. Ami vigya e murke vishaya kena diba sacharan amrita diya vishaya bulaiba. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material enjoyment? I will make him forget the idea of material enjoyment by giving him the nectar of my lotus feet. So the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling what he's thinking. God is revealing his mind. Like you go to the psychologist or the psychiatrist and he tries to have you open your mind or reveal your mind. What are you keeping in there? So Mahaprabhu, he's revealing the mind of God very candidly. He says, you fool, you stupid. You big fool. Why do you want these material things? Listen, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm more intelligent than you are. So I'm going to outwit you. Why should I give this fool material enjoyment? I will make him forget the idea of material enjoyment by giving him the nectar of my lotus feet. And of course everyone knows about the story of Dhruva Maharaj. He was searching for, the Bhagavatam says that his idea for a huge kingdom bigger than his father is like a piece of glass. When he had darshan of Narayan, he was thinking, he said himself that I was looking for glass and I found a rare jewel. And he was so satisfied that he didn't want anything else. So this is our aspiration also, that we become so satisfied that we don't want anything else. Lord Chaitanya's, we're banking on that. We're banking on Lord Chaitanya's intelligent dispensation of mercy. Because we certainly qualify. Because he said, if you're in the category, you get the mercy. So the qualification means you have to be a fool, a murk, and feel yourself very foolish. He himself was instructed by his own guru to always remain a fool before the spiritual master. Remember? He told the sannyasis at Varanasi, he said, why aren't you studying Vedanta? All the Vedanta sutras, Tattvamasi, Sarvakalvidam Brahma, Soham, and Janmadyasya yataha, aham brahmasmi, tamasi mam jyotirgama. These are all the Vedanta sutras you're supposed to study inside out, upside down. And you're just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Well, my guru told me I'm just a fool. I can't study Vedanta. So please forgive me. And then, of course, he went on to explain so much more. So I think we'll stop there. If there's any questions or comments. Yes.
He has a nice song where he explains how to transcend the six bad enemies, as Kama, you say.
Yes.
Anger and so on. For Kama, you say, right, you just make non-fruitive activities. But after, for anger, you say, you engage against the enemies of the devotees.
Yes.
You would like to say more about this because maybe some great soul like Narada Muni, he can curse and non-curse and have some transcendental anger. But for us, what we can do with anger?
Anger.
Krodha.
Krodha. There, in Hindi, there's a one type of food item. In English, it's called walnut. In Hindi, it's called akrod. So if you eat lots of walnuts, you'll get free from anger. Of course, Hanuman, the idea that we're always taught with everything, everything has its utility. We say utility is the principle. The principle is that we utilize or engage everything in the service of Krishna. So the anger of Hanuman, which is one of the anger is, you can say that anger is an expression of love, but upside down. Anger is an energy. It's an intensity. It's an emotion. But it usually expresses itself in a deleterious way or a harmful way. But it's also, you can say it's connected with the feeling of love. So Hanuman, he used his anger against Ravana. But I particularly like, when we mention our art of chanting, the description that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used for anger, which is quite practical. Because we're not so much in Ram Leela. And using our anger against Ravana. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said it's actually quite, it works like this, that Ravana is right inside of us. And we should use anger against ourselves. We should direct our anger against ourselves. He says that we should be angry. We should be somewhat upset or angry with, oh, I've been so many years in Krishna consciousness and chanting for so long, and I've been so fortunate to receive Vaishnava Diksha and this Gaudiya Sampradaya, but I'm so lazy, and I'm not surrendering, and I'm not progressing. So this energy of anger, anger is a great energy. It's an intensity. It's deep feelings, and it has great power. So we said we should direct our anger towards ourselves, and use that anger to try to improve our situation, improve our position, to beat the demon out of us, or to cut the heads off Ravana. Because dasahara, we say dusara. Dusara, the word dusara means dasahara. Das means 10, and ahara means to take away, to remove, ahara. So we celebrated a few days ago. That was the day that Ram killed Ravana. When fighting